The music we're hearing now, we mostly hear it as classic Americana. That's The Entertainer by Scott Joplin, just about as well known as his Maple Leaf Rag. Composer Scott Joplin was known in his lifetime as the King of Ragtime. But Joplin, the son of a former slave, thought of ragtime as classical music. And he predicted that only after his death on April 1st, 1917, would people begin to recognize the impact of the form. Pianist Laura Downs has a new album out called Reflections, Scott Joplin Reconsidered, and she joins us now. Hi there.
Hello. It's so great to be here.
So, Scott Joplin Reconsidered, why do we need to reconsider him?
Well, I needed to reconsider him because, you know, just like so many of us, I learned how to play The Entertainer when I was 6 or 7 years old. And, you know, then, of course, I moved away from his music for a long period and during my very, very serious classical music life and came back to him because of years now of research and recovery in my own career, my own work, of music by other Black composers. And I realized that he occupies a different space than what I had, you know, as a child taken for granted and that most of us take for granted.
So he was born just 4 years after Abraham Lincoln issued the Emancipation Proclamation, which is mind-boggling on its own. It would have been difficult, if not impossible, for him to be a classical pianist at that time. So he turned to what was the popular music of the day, which was ragtime. Let's listen here to his Magnetic Rag. Such a light touch to his composition there, but you argue that his music laid the foundation not just for popular music, but lots of different forms of music in the United States. What do you mean?
So I think he's working at this very critical turning point. I mean, it's literally the turn of a century, you know, and it's the time when America kind of enters the modern age. And I think that what he does to compensate for the opportunities that are denied is to integrate as much symphonic sound into his music as he can do, kind of like subversively, right? The thing about ragtime is that this is the first time that mainstream Americans have heard syncopation. I mean, that it blows your mind to think about that, right? There's this very distinct before and after, and all you do is shift the beat a little bit, right? So I think that, you know, it's this turning point and it's not recognized as such.
I want to make sure that our listeners understand what syncopation is. It's usually created by stressing the weak beat. And by weak beat, like if you'll get a beat that goes boom, 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 boom. And then if you're syncopated, you'd be like, that's all that syncopation is. And it's really odd for me to think about a time when that was not regular and that sounded new and revolutionary.
Yeah.
But it was.
I know.
You include pieces on this album from Tremonesha, which was one of the very first operas written by a Black American composer. Let's take a listen to some of the prelude. So Tremonesha is the name of the protagonist in this opera, who's a sharecropper who tries to get her community to reject some charlatans, some con men who have power over them. Very little known in its lifetime, still, I would say, not well known. What do you hear when you play this music? What do you hear that sticks out for you?
I mean, don't you hear in that just like his piano lessons, you know, the music that he loves from the 19th century. It's romantic. It's kind of full of these influences. And I don't know, there's just so much love in that music. And then it does turn and there are some blue notes that come in and you're aware, oh, no, wait, we're actually going somewhere different with this. We're going somewhere new. But the entire opera has that in it, that contrast of, you know, this great symphonic grand scale European form and this new sound that is black, that is American, that is ragtime.
It's such an interesting place that Joplin holds in American history, not just because I think what most people know of him is this tiny little narrow view. I think maybe some people know that he played piano in brothels to, you know, make his way. They don't know how successful he was as a band leader in all the places that he played. But I also feel like he was that generation, the first generation of Black Americans born after emancipation. Mm-hmm. And there was so much hope invested in that generation among mm-hmm. Black Americans. What do you think about Joplin as sort of the vanguard for free Blacks in the United States?
What's so interesting to me about him is that from the very beginning, he has ambitions and visions that seem, even given, you know, that this is a moment of change, they still seem very outsized, you know, pursuing so consistently this desire to write the first great African-American opera. I mean, that's not the first thing I think about doing if slavery's just been abolished. You know what I mean? It seems like a big jump.
Yeah, it just reflects an incredible amount of optimism and hope and love for this nation, remarkably, with yes. really not a lot of reason or a foundation for that love. Let's listen to another one of the Joplin pieces that you recorded. This one is called Solace. So this kind of fits into what we're talking about here, because you have written about that you choose to see the challenges Joplin faced as, quote, something unintentionally liberating and transformative, end quote. What do you mean by that?
The doors that are closed, the doors that don't let you into the room you thought you wanted to go into in the first place, you know, you carve out a new door and maybe the room you enter is bigger and better. And I think that as we look back at the history of Black artists in America, we see this over and over again. I think that this sound of innovation, this sound of finding a new solution, really is what defines American music. I think if we had to choose one thing, that's what we would hear over and over again.
You know, you have really focused in your career on highlighting the music of especially underrecognized Black American classical composers. You recorded some pieces, recently discovered pieces, by Florence Price. Who actually lived just down the street from my grandfather, William Grant Still, the dean of Black composers, Black American composers. Here's a bit of your recording of Summerland. So I have to ask you maybe an inappropriate question, which is, you know, when you achieve the level that you have, you could take one path in which you played all of the very revered and familiar showcased piano pieces that turn somebody into a piano star, right? A household name. And you're incredibly successful, but you're playing music that many people have never heard before. I mean, that's a choice that you had to make. Why did you make it?
You know, just those two little excerpts that you just played, this music pulls me. It does not let me go. There is a sound to this music that doesn't exist elsewhere. And I feel that it is such an incredible tragedy that this sound hasn't been present in all of our ears and all of our hearts all along. So, I mean, a few weeks ago, I was working at the Eastman School of Music in Rochester, and I was working with a group of Black students there. And we were talking about this weird burden that seems to come along with this music right now, or, you know, are we playing the music of Florence Price because it's so important to address injustices and racism in American history? Because that feels like a lot. Yeah. And what we came down to was that no, the reason that we're playing this music is because it is so spectacularly beautiful, and because it exists, it needs to be heard.
I want to go out with the song that you end your album with. It's your arrangement of Termination's Last Number, which is a real slow drag with a Brooklyn youth chorus. Let's hear a bit of it. Pianist Lara Downs' latest recording is Reflections, Scott Joplin Reconsidered. Always a pleasure, Lara. Thank you so much.
It's so wonderful to talk to you. Thanks, Celeste.